Hi, Dave Emery here. This is program number 1365. The Return of Sebastian Gorka, subtitled False Flag Terror in London, ? This is part two of this series. This is being recorded on December 14th of the year 2024. Now, once again, let me encourage emphatically listeners to the program to get the now 64 gigabyte flash drive with all of my life's work on it, plus both it's both printed and recorded, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books, easy to download PDF files. I get no money whatsoever from this. And there is a link at the top of each written for the record description and each food for thought post that will enable you to get this flash drive. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this. Now, plunging right back in where we left off, one of the things that I find very interesting is that the ruminations about the possibility of a allegedly Russian false flag incident that was to be blamed on Russia, there is that propaganda to that effect has been floated by British intelligence. There has been rumination about the possibility that might take place, such a false flag might take place in London. It has been alleged, and I will read that allegation, that webcams in London have gone dark since September. I don't know if that's the case, but if in fact there is a massive false flag operation planned for London, that would certainly be a good thing to help to see to it that loose ends don't emerge in connection with that false flag operation. We will talk more about that in a minute. But some more about the Vitezi Rand organization. Now, Donald Trump's new terrorism czar, unquote, Sebastian Gorka, was photographed wearing a medal and uniform of the Vitezi Rand organization, that's V-I-T-E-Z-I, last name R-E-N-B. That is an organization that overlaps the Hungarian Arrow Cross. That was the Hungarian fascist organization that allied itself with Adolf Hitler. By the way, the coordinator of the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council was a guy named Laszlo Pásztor, who coordinated youth activities of the Arrow Cross with Adolf Hitler. And the Arrow Cross overlaps the Vitezi Rand. Now, more about the background of that and the probability that it was actually Sebastian Gorka's grandfather who initially joined the organization, which would suggest that this is a family affair, that it was passed down to his father, who participated in the 1956 Hungarian incident, and that then apparently has been passed down to Sebastian Gorka himself. This is from the Loeb log, capital L-O-B-E log, February 12th of 2017. Why is Trump advisor wearing medal of Nazi collaborators? It is by Eli Clifton, C-L-I-F-P-O-N. And this concerned outrage that was generated when Donald Trump commemorated Holocaust Remembrance Day without mentioning the Jews, and that created a big kerfuffle. And that was the context for this. But skipping down into the article, when asked on Monday whether the White House's Holocaust Remembrance Day statement was, quote, questionable in being the first such statement in many years that didn't recognize that Jewish extermination was the chief goal of the Holocaust, unquote, Gorka told conservative talk show host Michael Medved, no, I'm not going to admit it because it's asinine. It's absurd. You're making a statement about the Holocaust. Of course it's about the Holocaust because that's what the statement's about. It's only reasonable to twist it if your objective is to attack the president. Well, you know, I would opine that actually the larger Holocaust was also of Russian or Soviet peoples and gays and Roma or gypsies and others. But obviously, Jews were the primary goal of systematic extermination of civilians outside of the USSR. Inside of the USSR, not so much. But continuing with this, that statement is particularly noteworthy when viewed in the context of Gorka's apparent affinity for a Hungarian group with a checkered past. Gorka, who worked in the UK and Hungary before immigrating to the US, was photographed at an inaugural ball wearing a medal from the Hungarian Order of Heroes, Vitezi Rend, a group listed by the State Department as taking direction from Germany's Nazi government during World War II. Now, some of the background. This is from a woman named Eva Balogh, B-A-L-O-G-H, founder of the news analysis blog Hungarian Spectrum and a former professor of Eastern European history at Yale University. And she confirmed the identity of the medal in saying, quote, "Yes, the medal is of the Vitezi Rend," unquote, established by Miklos Horthy in 1920. It was Admiral Miklos Horthy, who was the World War II head of state in Hungary. He was deposed by the Nazis in 1944 when he attempted to disally himself with Nazi Germany. Continuing, "He, as a mere governor, didn't have the privilege to ennoble his subjects as the king could do before 1918, and therefore the, quote, knightly order, unquote, he established was a kind of compensation for him. Officers and even enlisted men of exceptional valor could become knights. Between 1920 and 1944, there were 23,000 such knights. The title was inheritable by the oldest son. I found information that Gorka's father, Paul Gorka, used the title. However, since he was born in 1930, he couldn't himself be the one, quote, knighted, unquote. So most likely it was Gorka's grandfather who was the original recipient." Skipping down some of the background now. Miklos Horthy, capital M-I-K-L-O-S, Horthy, capital H-O-R-P-H-Y, regent of the Kingdom of Hungary from 1920 to 1944, established Vitezi Rend for both civilian and military supporters of Horthy's government. The group was initially open to non-Jews who served in distinction during World War I. Although Horthy's personal views about Jews are still debated, he was explicit in endorsing anti-Semitism even while showing some unease with the pace of the Holocaust. In an October 1940 letter to Prime Minister Paul Pilecki, P-E-L-E-K-I, Horthy said, "As regards the Jewish problem, I have been an anti-Semite throughout my life. I never had contact with Jews. I have never had contact with Jews. I have considered it intolerable that here in Hungary, everything, every factory, bank, large fortune, business, theater, press, commerce, etc. should be in Jewish hands." Pandemically, that's simply not true. "And that the Jews should be the image reflective of Hungary, especially abroad. Since, however, one of the most important tasks of the government is to raise the standard of living, i.e. we have to acquire wealth, it is impossible in a year or two to replace the Jews who have everything in their hands and to replace them with incompetent, unworthy, mostly big-mouthed elements, for we should become bankrupt. This requires a generation, at least." In April of 1941, Hungary became a de facto member of the Axis and permitted German troops to cross Hungary for the invasion of Yugoslavia. The first massacres of Jews took place in August when SS troops murdered between 18 and 20,000 Jews without Hungarian citizenship after they'd been deported from Hungary to Ukraine. By 1944, Horthy may have sought to distance Hungary from Nazi Germany, but agreed to deport around 100,000 Jews. The German army removed Horthy from office after it occupied Hungary. Horthy's actual awareness of the fate of Hungarian Jews remains unclear, but reports by journalists and the State Department in 1942 are explicit about the role played and benefits enjoyed by the Vitezi Rend's members. A Jewish Telegraph Agency report from October of 1942 describes how confiscated Jewish real estate in Hungary will be distributed by the government among members of the, quote, Hungarian Order of Heroes, unquote. It was announced today over the Budapest radio. one more time. Confiscated Jewish real estate in Hungary will be distributed by the government among members of the, quote, Hungarian Order of Heroes, unquote. It was announced today over the Budapest radio. The order consists of soldiers who distinguished themselves in the last war or in the present war. Quote, in 1942, there was a so-called land reform, unquote, said Balog. It actually meant the expropriation of agricultural lands owned by Jewish citizens. According to government propaganda, this move was necessary to ease social tensions in the countryside, but as a recent study shows, most of the land went to, quote, royal, middle-class supporters of the regime, among them members of the Vitezi Rend. And then the next section, a checkered legacy. The State Department lists the Order of Heroes as an organization that was, quote, under the direction of the Nazi government of Germany, unquote. Membership in such groups during World War II could make individuals ineligible for U.S. visas. I would add, no, most assuredly did not. And we've spoken about the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council and John Loftus's heroic work on this and in many past programs. Continuing, the State Department's website warns that membership in groups under this designation, quote, renders ineligible for a visa any alien who participated in the persecution of any person because of race, religion, national origin, or political opinion during the period from March 23, 1933 to May 8, 1945 under the direction of or in association with the Nazi government of Germany or an allied or occupied government. The Vitezi Rend was banned during the Soviet occupation of Hungary but reestablished itself in exile. The order was awarded to members of the Hungarian diaspora and individuals in Hungary since 1983. Although appearing to largely promote Hungarian culture and the diaspora, it sought foreign donors to help fund the construction of a statue of Horthy in 2011. A fundraising document read, quote, we have decided after almost seven decades to erect a statue in honor of our beloved regent, and to remember him, therefore we ask for your support, unquote. And again, quoting, in post-World War II Hungary, no noble titles of any sort can be officially used, unquote, said Balog. Again, quoting, the knightly order no longer officially exists. However, right-wing emigres kept the order going abroad, unquote. She later added, again, quoting, many supporters of the Horthy regime were enamored by the Nazis, and Hitler and the, quote, knights were especially so. Put it that way, after 1948, one wouldn't have bragged about his father being a, quote, Vitez, unquote. Lately, however, especially since 2010, it has become fashionable again to boast about such illustrious ancestors, unquote. So again, it would appear, as I said, that Sebastian Gorka is in the general milieu, my favorite word, of the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council, again, a Nazi branch of the Republican Party. The coordinator for that, by the way, again, as I mentioned earlier, is Laszlo Pastor, who coordinated activities between the Arrow Cross and its youth brigade in particular, and Adolf Hitler. And essentially, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Council is a branch of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, a renaming of the Hitler and Rosenberg Committee of Subjugated Nations from 1943, the Hungarian Arrow Cross, and related elements, and probably like the Vitezi Rend, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Bulgarian National Front, the Slovakian Rinka Party, the Croatian Ustashi, the Ukrainian OUNB, and others. Now, back to the speculative element that cued this inquiry. But again, bear in mind that this Vitezi Rend guy, Sebastian Gorka, is now Donald Trump's, quote, terrorism czar, unquote. He's a militant Russophobe and appears to be hell-bent forever to not only continue but to ramp up the proxy war in Ukraine. Trump has alleged that he is going to tamp that down. Believe it when I see it. What I suspect will happen, he will make a proposal to Putin that is unacceptable because it will simply kick the can down the road. Putin will reject it and Trump will say, well, there you go, and he can't trust the Ruskies, blah, 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 blah. and away we will go. Now, the speculation about a false flag event in London was in the Alex Kramer Substack, Alex Kramer, and it speaks of the allegation that nearly all of London's webcams went dark in early September. I cannot verify that that happened, but certainly if there is in fact a false flag operation, a big and nasty one planned for London, or for somewhere else in the UK, but where the alleged perps would traffic through London, that would certainly be a prerequisite. This is from the Alex Kramer, Substack blog of November 29th of 2024. Again, some of the stuff in here is BS. I cannot verify that, the webcam cameras have gone dark, but I think it's something we need to be alert for. Now, Alex Kramer writes as follows in his blog. Yesterday, as I was finalizing my new report on Great Britain, an update to my August 26th article, The Coming Collapse of Britain, unquote, YouTube randomly suggested to me a short video by one Craig Houston, H-O-U-S-T-O-N, titled, quote, Why Are All London Webcams Offline, unquote. I was nearly floored. Mr. Houston looked through hundreds of webcams across London and could not find a single one that was live. Again, I cannot verify that. There are screenshots here, but you know that is so easy to fake and even maybe. So again, I cannot state that this is accurate, but I am afraid of the possibility that it might be and terrified of what that might portend. So again, this admittedly speculative element is included here for that reason. One more time. I was nearly floored. Mr. Houston looked through hundreds of webcams across London and could not find a single one that was live. See for yourself here and here. That is extremely odd. Clearly someone made the decision to switch them all off. They couldn't have all failed randomly. One of the webcams over the Westminster Bridge displayed the last image it recorded. It was on September 2nd of 2024 at 16:51, which at least gives a clue about when the Heart of Darkness went dark to the world. I posted a comment about this in my Trend Compass report yesterday, and one of the readers found a working webcam at Abbey Road. Still, that's one out of hundreds that are still dark. And again, whether or not these webcams are dark, I cannot say. This may be disinformation. God knows there's no shortage of that on the Internet. So, again, no harm in presenting this, I think, with the very strong caveat that I'm providing here. But if, in fact, this allegation is accurate, I think it portends something very bad. Continuing. Why someone would decide to cut all the webcams is a mystery and an ominous one. Mr. Houston didn't offer any explanations, which is understandable given that he lives in Britain where singing, quote, kung fu fighting, unquote, or silently playing on the sidewalk can get you arrested. But were he declined to tread, I'll venture a guess. They're planning a false flag event to blame on Russia. I think it's the only explanation that makes any sense to my mind. They are planning a false flag terror attack on London, which they will blame on Russia, so that they can trigger an all-out, whole-of-society mobilization by all of the Western powers against Russia. Now, if this seems far-fetched, there are now several important elements that fit coherently with this scenario, starting with the general geopolitical state of things. Western Empire, and the UK in particular, bet heavily on Ukraine and lost. By now, the situation has become as undeniable as it is hopeless. But Western powers aren't showing any inclination to cut and run like they did from Vietnam in March of 1972 or Afghanistan in August of 2021. Today, the West is facing the world's largest nuclear power with an established escalatory dominance in the region and a highly motivated, well-trained, battle-hardened, and well-equipped force, including with new, devastating conventional weaponry that eclipses anything the West has in its depleted arsenals. In spite of that, they are still escalating. The question is, why? The next session in Ukraine, the whole world is at stake. Ukraine is too important for them and the stakes could not be higher. From the imperial cabal's point of view, the prize, in fact, is the whole world. In his paper, Democratic Ideals and Reality, Sir Halford Mackinder, M-A-C-K-I-N-D-E-R, wrote a quote, "Who rules East Europe commands the heartland. Who rules the heartland commands the world island. Who rules the world island controls the world." The notion of the world island or Earth Island is one that we have spoken about at length over the years, and there are many programs dealing with that. Continuing. By world island, Mackinder meant the Eurasian landmass. His theoretical framework remained the foundation of foreign policy for British and American governments to this very day, as we learned as recently as 2018 from Wes Mitchell, President Trump's Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. In a briefing to the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he made it explicit that the, quote, central aim of the administration's foreign policy is to defend U.S. domination of Eurasian landmass as the foremost U.S. national security interest and to prepare the nation for this challenge, unquote. Mitchell also said the administration was, quote, working with our close ally, the U.K., to form an international coalition for coordinating efforts in this field, unquote. These views are not just idle musings of academics or entertainment for think tanks. The reality on the ground confirms that this is indeed how the imperial cabal regards the outcome of the battle for Ukraine. From the beginning of the war, a few of their lieutenants voiced the entrenched mindset. Quote, if we lose in Ukraine, the world order will be created. Excuse me, begin again. If we lose in Ukraine, the world order we created 80 years ago will crumble, unquote. Then U.S. Chief of Staff Mark Milley, April of 2022. Quote, if we lose in Ukraine, we will lose the world for decades. Defeat in Ukraine could be the beginning of the end of the golden age of the West. Unquote. This by Matuz Morawiecki, Morawiecki, probably mispronouncing that, Poland's prime minister in a TV address, April of 2023. Quote, if Ukraine loses, world order will be established by our enemies, unquote, former NATO Secretary General, 1999 to 2003, and member of the House of Lords of the British Parliament, George Robertson, in the Telegraph of January 2024, quote, if Ukraine falls, it will be a catastrophe for the West. It will be the end of Western hegemony, and we will have no time. One more time. If Ukraine falls, it would be a catastrophe for the West. It would be the end of Western hegemony, and we will have no one to blame but ourselves, unquote, Boris Johnson, in a short video message, April of 2024. It is unlikely that the Empire's vested interests will quietly accept this, quote, catastrophe, unquote. This is why they are escalating provocations against Russia, desperately hoping that the Russians will strike at a NATO member nation, creating the pretext to invoke Article 5 of the NATO Treaty and unleash a unified response where the collective West would confront Russia in a whole-of-society effort and hopefully snatch a victory out of the jaws of defeat. Sometimes provocations work, and they trigger the intended response. And again, it talks about various things. This guy's half-baked. I mean, he's got some good things to say, but, you know, Pearl Harbor was not a provocation. And as I spoke about at great length last week in For the Record program 1362 and for the Record 1363, continuing talking about some of the incidents. The Manchuria, creating a helpful wave of national indignation. But there are circumstances when a galvanizing event must be orchestrated to detonate the greater conflict, and the list of known examples through history is very long. Here's just a few cases, the Manchuria or Mukden incident. In September of 1931, Japanese troops set off a small explosion on a train track owned by a Japanese company, then blamed it on China in order to justify the invasion of Manchuria. Attack on the Gladitz radio station in September of 1939, the Nazis shelled the station and accused Polish troops for the deed, giving Hitler the pretext to launch the invasion of Poland. Operation Northwoods in March of 1962. The operation was shut down by President Kennedy, but the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff planned a campaign of terror against civilian targets in Miami in order to, quote, create a helpful wave of national indignation, unquote, and lead to a U.S. invasion of Cuba. Gulf of Tonkin Incident in August of 1964. Two U.S. destroyers stationed in the Gulf of Tonkin radioed that they had been targeted by the North Vietnamese forces, triggering U.S. Congress to pass the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution and authorize President Johnson to go all in on Vietnam. And then September 11th, that wasn't a false flag attack. So this is the problem with this guy. He takes some of the BS level like Pearl Harbor was a provocation. No, it was not. It was a case of gross incompetence by the military command in Hawaii, primarily Admiral Kimmel, but also General Short, as we looked at last week. September 11th wasn't a false flag attack. However, it was deliberately allowed to proceed, and we've spoken about that. Hell, I talked about the fact that the Bin Laden family helped to finance Arbusto Energy, George W. Bush's first energy company, in a program that I did called, for the record, 186, called What Does the W in George W. Bush Stand For? I recorded that in the last week of calendar year 1999, the last week of December of 1999. So, I mean, the links between Bin Laden, the CIA, the Bush family, and beyond that, even more importantly, the financing of Bin Laden through the Bank al-Taqwa, founded by former Adler intelligence agent Youssef Naba, also in partner, one of the central figures in the founding of Bank al-Taqwa was Francois Genoux. But again, September 11th wasn't a false flag operation. It was, however, deliberately allowed to move forward, and it did serve as the pretext for all kinds of things, domestic and foreign. I've written about that at great length in the past. Continuing, Gupta chemical attack in August of 2013, orchestrated by Western proxy forces with the help of the British-led and ISIS staff White Helmets, a chemical attack on civilians in Gupta was blamed on Bashar al-Assad's forces. Had the charge stuck, it would have crossed the, quote, red line, unquote, for U.S. and NATO intervention in Syria, as I speak, on December 14th of 2014, that is particularly resonant. Continuing. The examples are very numerous. A new false flag attack aimed at triggering World War III against Russia wouldn't be unusual in the context of history. If the population is taken by surprise and the people genuinely believe the official narrative about the attacks, this does invariably create the, quote, helpful waves of national indignation, unquote, allowing the country's leaders to wrap themselves in the flag, promise justice at whatever cost, and start moving the pieces irreversibly toward the desired military escalation. Alex Kramer's Substack is a reader, anyway, that talks about that. That's a prompt here. Continuing, I believe that this is the reason why Western powers are encouraging Ukraine to strike into Russia with their missiles, even though there is almost nothing to be gained. Such escalation only makes them directly involved as belligerents in the conflict. This is why, incredibly, the U.S. is suddenly discussing providing Ukraine with nuclear weapons. They may hope that Russia will respond impulsively, but they know that Vladimir Putin almost certainly won't take the bait. That's where the false flag comes in, probably in the shape of the detonation of a nuclear weapon in London. I would add, one of the things that did trigger the Russian invasion of Ukraine was the fact that the Zelensky regime had repudiated the Budapest Accords. In other words, there were protocols. They basically were moving to arm themselves with nuclear weapons, and that is one of the reasons why Russia invaded in the first place. So continuing, I can't imagine how this could be done. They may hope that Russia will respond impulsively, but they know that Vladimir Putin almost certainly won't take the bait. That's where the false flag comes in. He opines probably in the shape of the detonation of a nuclear weapon in London. I don't know about that. I would think, you know, another Novichok, you know, false flag nerve gas attack would be more doable. We've already seen, you know, false flag, you know, alleged Novichok attacks on the Skripals in Britain. Again, Novichok is a state-of-the-art nerve gas. A gram will kill thousands of people. If you don't have atropine to neutralize a nerve gas, immediately handy, you will become what Monty Python referred to as an ex-alibit. The notion that the Skripals were hit by Novichok but survived is ridiculous. The notion that the late Alexei Navalny had Novichok put in his underwear and survived is actually quite funny. But I don't think a detonation of a nuclear weapon is what is in order here. And again, I want to stress, I don't know that the webcams are in fact offline. It would seem to me that if that were in fact the case, we'd be hearing more about it. But we'll see. It may be that video was channeled to Alex Kramer to discredit his blog, which is a possibility. But again, no harm done if we qualify this as heavily as I have. But if in fact that is the case, it would be yet another indicator or indication of a possible huge false flag on the way in the UK. And the blogger goes on to comment, there should be a very rigorous custody control chain with every warhead warehoused in any Western power. But if such weapons were given to Ukraine, that's where the custody chain would end. From there, nuclear devices could be free to roam and drift back into the heart of darkness, that's the UK, to serve their false flag purposes, perhaps on special CIA or MI6 flights, or perhaps in ordinary shipping containers. Another possibility would be a Berkey bomb, right? And it was not a nuclear weapon per se, but conventional explosive with radioactive material to spread radioactivity all over the place. I think that would be far more likely than a nuclear explosion, because the radioactive material, the material used in the chain reaction in a nuclear explosion, could be traced with great precision. But a Berkey bomb, maybe not so much. Continuing. Suppose if such a device were detonated from a shipping container on a ship, a train, or a truck, some webcam might catch the event. But if all the webcams were dark, the news, which will have their story scripted beforehand, can report that it was a Russian missile, and it would be very unlikely that anybody could ever prove otherwise. If such images ever did surface, they'd almost certainly be few, and they could be quickly traced and removed from circulation. That time the actors read out the... this possibility. Again, he's skipping down, he writes, it's time that switching off all the webcams in London can't be a random event. It requires an explanation. Mine is a guess, but if there's a different coherent explanation for why all of London's webcams went dark in early September, I can't even begin to imagine. Again, another caveat. I can't verify that that was the case. It may not be the case. It may be that whoever that Mr. Houston was channeled that video of this guy to discredit his blog. Again, that huge caveat. But in any event, I think the warnings of a false flag operation in UK, London in particular, should be taken very seriously, particularly with the terrorism czar Sebastian Gorka from the Nazi collaborationist, the Tezi Rend, as Trump's appointee, who's going to be overseeing terrorism incidents. And he's a militant Russophobe, wants to go after Putin. Continuing. And anyway, he said, today is Thanksgiving, the blogger concludes, today is Thanksgiving, and it almost pains me to share these dark musings. For one thing, I could be wrong. That much is obvious. And then it's a downer. It's nothing to be thankful for. But if I happen to be right, the one way false flag events can fail is if the public sees through them. False flag planners must ambush the people and shock them from the clear blue skies. A spectacular event like 9/11 will have a powerful impact on people's emotions, and in that moment they'll be susceptible to deceptive narratives. I would have this guy completely missed the boat on COVID, you know. I mean, it drives me nuts. But anyway, continuing, that, quote, helpful wave of indignation, unquote, will materialize. But if the public is forewarned and expects that a false flag might take place, they might suspect that it was, quote, an inside job, unquote, and the attack could blow back into the conspirators' faces. I have therefore decided to risk the ruining of my American readers' long weekend and to also risk embarrassing myself. Well, again, I can't say that the London webcams have gone dark. Again, maybe they did. If so, we wouldn't necessarily be hearing much about it, but I wonder if the video that was channeled to this guy was to discredit him. I do think, though, we need to be very, very alert for this. Again, with Sebastian Gorka ruling the roost with regard to Trump's assessments of any terrorism. Now, by way of background, the aforementioned Kip Klarenberg, K-L-A-R-E-N-B-E-R-V, has been doing some great work. And in the A Closer Look on Syria blog, he has an article, The CIA MI6 Skirpal Conspiracy Exposed. And this was offered on November 17th of 2024. And it reads, I'll read as much as we have time for here. And this, by way of background, certainly false flag operations, but again, the Skirpals is taken as a given, as manna from heaven by our media, despite the fact that it was almost certainly a provocation. Again, Novichok, bloody hell, that is a state-of-the-art nerve gas. A gram will kill thousands of people. If you've been hit with Novichok and if you don't have atropine, again, the one thing that can counteract the nerve gas, immediately handy, you're dead meat, Jack, okay? November 17th, 2024. All my investigations are free to access thanks to the generosity of my... Anyway, blah, 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 blah. This is a solicitation. I'm continuing. On October 14th, a much-delayed inquiry into the mysterious death of Dawn Sturges, S-T-U-R-G-E-S-S, a British citizen who died in July of 2018 after repeatedly coming in contact with Novichok nerve agent left in England by a pair of Russian assassins, finally commenced. Already, the public show trial has unearthed tantalizing evidence, gravely undermining the official narrative of the poisoning of GRU defector Sergei Skirpal and his daughter Yulia in Salisbury in March of that year, in 2018. These revelations emerged despite the British state's best efforts to sabotage the inquiry and curtail its ability to ascertain the truth. For one, the Skirpals have been prevented from testifying despite formally requesting to do so. Such is the apparent risk of Russian intelligence attempting to target the pair anew. Not even their video-recorded police interviews from the time can be entered into evidence. Meanwhile, the urgent question of what British intelligence and security services knew and when they knew it will not be explored. Yet primary source evidence indicating British spies and their American counterparts were well aware that the two Russians accused of attempting to murder the Skirpals were visiting Britain in advance of their arrival has lain in plain sight for years, one more time. Yet, primary source evidence indicating British spies and their American counterparts were well aware that the two Russians accused of attempting to murder the Skirpals were visiting Britain in advance of their arrival has lain in plain sight for years. Whether such foreknowledge implies that MI6 and CIA were in reality behind the abortive hit remains a matter of interpretation, but that the CIA and MI6 sought to exploit the Russians' presence in Salisbury for malign purposes appears beyond doubt. In January 2021, the U.S. watchdog group American Oversight released hundreds of pages of emails sent to and from the personal address of Mike Pompeo, CIA director from January 2017 to April of 2018. In many cases, the emails were official agency communications discussing matters of extreme sensitivity conducted off books. The records, heavily redacted under the U.S. National Security Act, show that on March 1st of 2018, Pompeo was approached by two high-ranking CIA operatives who asked for a personal meeting on a, quote, very urgent matter, unquote. They explained, quote, a very positive opportunity is within reach, but requires your engagement because of the urgency. I am convinced that this is a very promising opportunity, unquote. Pompeo responded in the affirmative, and the meeting went ahead early the next morning. Underlining the covert summit's importance, the emails indicate CIA high rankers were preparing to pitch the, quote, positive opportunity, unquote, to the agency's chief from the early hours of March 2nd. Eerily, the initial email requesting Pompeo's sign-off on the plot was sent less than half an hour after Ruslan Boshirov, B-O-S-H-I-R-O-V, and Alexandra Petrov, P-E-T-R-O-V, Skripal's alleged assassins, purchased plane tickets from Moscow to London Gatwick for their Salisbury visit. One more time. Eerily, the initial email requesting Pompeo's sign-off on the plot was sent less than half an hour after Ruslan Boshirov and Alexander Petrov, Skripal's alleged assassins, purchased plane tickets from Moscow to London Gatwick for their Salisbury visit. The mystery of how Boshirov and Petrov, two purportedly false personae concocted by Russian intelligence with virtually no paper trail testifying to their existence, were able to secure difficult-to-obtain multi-entry visas to Britain has never been adequately explained. Indeed, it should have been impossible for the pair to visit the country based on established rules and regulations. We are thus left to ponder if the two men walked into a trap cooked up by the British, and once ensnared, MI6 sought to embroil the CIA in their connivance. Again, bear in mind the British intel heritage of Paul Gorka, Sebastian Gorka's father, both apparently of the Tezit Ren, the Nazi collaborationist organization. Continuing. Strong option. Who emailed Pompeo was redacted, although then-CIA Deputy Director Gina Haspel is an obvious candidate. A long-standing Russia hawk who cut her agency teeth recruiting spies in the Soviet Union in the years before its collapse, she served as the CIA's London station chief twice, from 2008 to 2011 and 2014 to 2017. Sergei Skripal arrived in Britain in July of 2010 via a grand spy swap during her first tenure, which was negotiated by Haspel's longtime collaborator, Daniel Hoffman, then CIA Moscow station chief. He was among the very first sources to publicly blame Russia for the Salisbury incident. Despite Haspel's, quote, unusual, unquote, second spell in London, Skripal's enduring connection to his homeland and yearning to return would have been well known to British intelligence. Serendipitously, BBC veteran Mark Urban, capital U-R-B-A-N, interviewed the GRU defector throughout the year prior to his poisoning. He recorded that Skripal was, quote, an unashamed Russian nationalist, enthusiastically adopting the Kremlin line on many matters, even while sitting in his MI6 purchased house, unquote. Coincidentally, Urban once served in the same tank regiment as Pablo Miller, Skripal's MI6 recruiter in Hamburg and Salisbury neighbor. Formerly, Kremlin official Valery Morozov, M-O-R-O-Z-O-V, an associate of the GRU defector likewise exiled to Britain, claimed days after the poisoning that Skripal remained in, quote, regular, unquote, contact with Moscow's embassy in London and met with Russian military intelligence officers there, quote, every month, unquote. He also flatly repudiated any suggestion the purported nerve agent attack on Sergei and Yulia was Moscow's doing. Quote, Putin can't be behind this. I know how the Kremlin works. I work there. Who is Skripal? He is nothing for Putin. Putin doesn't think about him. There is nobody in Kremlin talking about former intelligence officers who is nobody. There is no reason for this. It is more dangerous for them for such things to happen, unquote. Note this. This is very, by them he means the Kremlin. There is no reason for this. It is more dangerous for them for such things to happen, unquote. But this information was not shared with Haspel stretches credulity. The Washington Post has reported how her time in Britain made her the personal, quote, linchpin, unquote, of the CIA's relationship with MI6, the agency's, quote, most important foreign partner, unquote. Her British colleagues gushed to the outlet, quote, she knows them so well, they call her the honorary UK desk officer, unquote. Haspel regularly drew on this experience to, quote, stabilize the transatlantic alliance, unquote, between London and Washington, which was frequently strained while she was CIA director from May of 2018 to January of 2021. This friction resulted in no small part from Trump legitimately accusing British chaos agents of, quote, conspiring with American intelligence to spy on his presidential campaign, unquote, charges that, quote, rattled the British government at the highest levels, unquote. Strikingly, a cited example of Haspel's stabilizing CIA relations with MI6, provided by the Washington Post, was convincing a highly reluctant president to back the Western-wide expulsion of Russian diplomats, encouraged by London in the Salisbury incident's wake. How Haspel pressed Trump over Salisbury was revealed in April of 2019. The New York Times reported that the president at first downplayed Skripal's alleged poisoning and refused to respond, believing the apparent attack to be, quote, legitimate spy games, distasteful, but within the bounds of espionage, unquote. However, Haspel successfully lobbied Trump to take the, quote, strong option, unquote, of expelling Russian embassy staff in the U.S. by providing him with British-sourced emotional images, unquote. Quote, Haspel showed pictures the British government had supplied her of young children hospitalized after being sickened by the Novichok nerve agent that poisoned the Skripals. She then showed a photograph of ducks British officials said were inadvertently killed by the sloppy work of the Russian operatives. Reminds me of the allegation by Trump and Vance that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio are picking geese and ducks and eating them. By the way, that allegation comes from the Nazi group Blood Tribe, and they in turn were networked with the Azov military formations in Ukraine. And it was that allegation, basically, that meme from the Nazi group Blood Tribe that was then echoed by Donald Trump in his debate with Kamala Harris and then echoed repeatedly by J.D. Vance, basically taking a meme created by a Nazi group and mounted up by the Nazi group affiliated with the Azov military formations in Ukraine, and then basically blaring all over the U.S. So one more time. Haspel showed pictures the British government had supplied her of young children hospitalized after being sickened by the Novichok nerve agent that poisoned the Skripals. She then showed a photograph of ducks British officials said were inadvertently killed by the sloppy work of the Russian operatives. Trump fixated on the pictures of the sickened children and the dead ducks. At the end of the briefing, he embraced the strong option, unquote. The next is called Operation Foot. In Trump's case, I think we might call it Operation Foot in Mouth, but we'll continue here. The New York Times expose caused a stir upon release, not least because the, quote, emotional images, unquote, described had never hitherto been published or referred to in the mainstream media. While the Skripals giving bread to three local boys to feed ducks in Salisbury's Avon Playground on March 4th, 2018, was initially widely reported, no media outlet, government minister, spokesperson, health professional, or law enforcement official had ever previously claimed children and or waterfowl were in any way, quote, sickened, unquote, after coming into contact with Novichok. The reverse, in fact. On March 26th that year, the Daily Mail recorded that the boys given bread by the Skripals, one of whom apparently ate some, were, quote, rushed to the hospital for blood tests amid fears they'd been poisoned, unquote, but promptly discharged after being given, quote, the all clear, unquote. Moreover, 2 days after the New York Times article was published, British health officials issued a statement not only refuting the report entirely, but denying any children were admitted to the hospital in Salisbury as a result of Novichok exposure at all. Subsequently, the New York Times radically amended its piece, removing any suggestion that Haspel showed photos of Novichok victims provided by the British. In fact, the newspaper reverse-ferreted she had, quote, displayed pictures illustrating the consequences of nerve agent attacks, not images specific to the chemical attack in Britain, unquote. The question of whether the aforementioned images did exist and were forged by British intelligence for the explicit purpose of bouncing Trump into a hostile, anti-Russia stance remains open 5.5 years later. After all, British spies had been planning and hoping for a mass defenestration of Russian diplomats globally as a prelude to all-out war with Moscow for years by that point. In January 2015, MI6 and NATO front, the Institute for Statecraft, or IFS, published a document setting out, quote, potential levers, unquote, for achieving, quote, regime change in Russia, spanning, quote, diplomacy, unquote, finance, unquote, security, unquote, technology, industry, military, and even culture, unquote. One lever, which IFS listed thrice, stated, quote, simultaneously expel every Russian intelligence officer and air, defense, and naval attaché from as many countries as possible, global operation foot. And then Kitlinger goes on to comment, Operation Foot saw 105 Soviet officials deported from Britain in September of 1971. Several mainstream media outlets referenced this historic incident when reporting on London successfully corralling 26 countries, including, of course, the U.S., into expelling over 150 Russian diplomatic staff in response to the Salisbury incident in March of 2018. As a result, IFS got one step closer to its long-standing objective of, quote, armed conflict of the old-fashioned sort, unquote, with Russia, which, quote, Britain and the West could win, unquote. Fast forward to today, and Britain and the West are on the verge of losing that conflict once and for all. Meanwhile, the Salisbury incident's ever-fluctuating official narrative continues to shift radically in ways large and small. Contrary to all prior media reports on the matter, the Dawn Sturges inquiry has now been told. One boy given bread by the Skripals to feed ducks actually did get sick, unquote, as a result, and he and his friends, quote, were unwell for a day or two afterwards. Again, it's just, this is mind-boggling. Again, Novichok is a state-of-the-art nerve gas. If you get exposed to that, you'll get sick for a day or two. You don't have atropine handy, boy. You will become what Monty Python referred to as an ex-Albert, perhaps here a dead duck. I mean, it's just, but again, this is all, you know, this is amateur hour here, so really not, shouldn't be that surprised. Continuing, this fresh rewriting neatly ties in with the highly controversial claim unflinchingly clung to by British authorities that the Skripals were poisoned with Novichok smeared on the doorknob of Sergei's home on the morning of March 4th of 2018 before heading into Salisbury. As subsequent investigations will show, available evidence, including Yulia Skripal's own hospital bed testimony, points unmistakably to the pair being attacked elsewhere at a different time and by another means entirely, with British and American intelligence square in the frame. By the way, the site of the alleged attack was not too far from Porton Down. That's P-O-R-T-O-N, Down, D-O-W-N. That is the British equivalent of Fort Beefick. That is where their biological and chemical warfare activities are centered. So again, the Kit Clarenberg article about the alleged KGB Novichok attack on the Skripals, I think should give us some background into not only how British intelligence and U.S. intelligence collaborate to set up these false flag operations. It also, I think, should give us some background on just how bleeping gullible so many people are. I mean, it's just, again, you can get hit with Novichok, baby. You can kiss your A-block blank goodbye. I mean, that's it. You know, bye. See ya. You know, good luck in heaven if that's where you're going. But, again, just about anything here will work. Ignorance is really, really important for these things. Something like 54% of the American public read at a fifth grade lower level. I thought it was sixth grade, but someone who is very knowledgeable corrected me and said, no, it's fifth grade. One in eight is completely illiterate. That's 12%. But then you have the people who watch too much YouTube, too much television, too much stuff on their phones, and basically now, it's just incredible. And our media, are an echo chamber for the worst of this stuff, talking about, and that goes for the so-called progressive media as well. There's a comment paper on Pacifica Radio. I won't mention who that is, but who routinely echoes the Skripal nonsense and the Alexei Navalny nonsense about Putin, as do the mainstream media. And watching the media talking about the crushing defeat the Democrats suffered in November. Well, certainly the Republicans not only won the White House, they won the Senate and then the House of Representatives. But Donald Trump actually got less than 50% of the popular vote. He got a little bit more than Kamala Harris, with many people having voted for a small percentage, but many people having voted for alternative candidates, including apparently a significant portion of the large Muslim population in Michigan who couldn't bring themselves to vote for Kamala Harris because of Gaza. I can understand how they might have been upset about Gaza, but well, they're really going to love Donald Trump. And as far as the public, you're part of the whole Russiagate BS. And by the way, Robert Mueller, the very special prosecutor indeed, behind the quote Russiagate unquote investigation, has an interesting background. He is the grandnephew of Richard Bissell, one of the three CIA officials, along with Alan Dulles, who was axed by JFK for lying to him about the Bay of Pigs. He is married to Anne Cobble Standish, the granddaughter of General Charles Cobble, the other of the three CIA officials that was axed by JFK. Earl Cobble, General Charles Cobble's brother, was a CIA officer and also mayor of Dallas, Texas, on 11-22-63. And, it never ceases to amaze me how people keep making the same mistake over and over. I mean, Donald Trump, he's going to fix the economy. We're going to make the price of groceries go down. Sure he will. And he won't cut Social Security or Medicare. Nah, that's what he said. But again, people never effing learn. They just don't learn. They keep making the same mistake over and over and over and over and over. By the way, in the written description for the record program 1360 and 1361, I didn't have time to include it in the main body of the program, but there was a very thoughtful post about the late science fiction writer Philip K. Dick's substantive observations about what television viewing does to the brain. I suggest you read it, okay? Because, boy, we got a lot of TV brains out there. However, I am strongly encouraging people to get that 64-gigabyte flash drive, the antithesis to television brain, that has all of my work both recorded and printed on it, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDF files. The years of brilliant commentary by our wonderful contributing editor, Tara Fackler, on there. Please get it. Again, I'm very pessimistic about the future. That flash drive will enable you to explain to your descendants why they are living in a rusted-out Chevy sport van and why they have to go out every morning and battle former Army Rangers for rat-killing turf. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this. There are links at the top of each written for-the-record description and each food-for-thought post that will enable you to get that flash drive. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this. It's my entire life's work, donated for free. This concludes For the Record program number 1365, The Return of Sebastian Gorka, False Flag Incident in London, ? This is being recorded on December 14th of the year 2024. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.